family members searching for answers after three people are found dead inside a local home. What investigators are sharing about the discovery. Then WRAL is going in-depth on the conflicts between Israel and Hamas. New at 7, we unpack the history of power, politics, and religion at the center of the clashes.
From sprinkles to scattered showers, we're tracking two rounds of rain. An hour-by-hour look at when we could dodge raindrops at the State Fair this weekend.
Then the Canes are on ice, hoping for the first win of the season. WRAL is live at PNC with a look at the excitement around the home opener.
All right, here we go. Right now it's 7 o'clock. We are tracking a system bringing some showers our way. You can see all the green on this radar view. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm Dan Haggerty.
And I'm Ashley Rowe. Let's take a live look now at Sanford. You know, usually we see a beautiful sunset. Look at this blue sky behind us. Meteorologist Kat Campbell is in the WRAL Severe Weather Center with a timeline on this wet weather and when it clears out. Kat?
All the clouds that we saw move in today, that was all ahead of the rain. And this system stemming from the Gulf of Mexico, the bulk of the heavy rain stays to our south, but we're going to be on the northern edge, and that's why rain chances are really going to be the highest from the Triangle Point south. But the rain really doesn't arrive until later tonight. By 10 o'clock, we'll have a chance for rain mainly in the southern part of our viewing area, but it's not until after midnight into 3 a.m. that the rain really becomes more widespread. Still, it looks like it would be fairly light. There could be a brief period of more moderate rain tomorrow morning in our southern counties, but it should stay fairly light for the morning commute if there's any left in the Triangle. For the Triangle, we are done with rain chances tomorrow by 10 a.m. Certainly good news, especially since the gates open at the State Fair at noon. Still a few showers possible at noon in our southern counties, but we clear out during the afternoon and even the clouds clear out. As for how much rain we'll see, not much at all in the Triangle, but there could be up to a quarter of an inch in some of our southern counties. We've got another shot at rain for the weekend. I'll have the timeline for that round coming up.
Okay, Kat. Thank you.
We are learning more about three people found dead in a home in Vance County not long after one of them was reported missing. Police now trying to figure out how they died. Their bodies were discovered late last night at a home on Keene Street in Henderson. WRAL's Destiny Patterson explains how family members are now looking for answers.
A woman came to this house to check on her family members, but no one came to the door. In fact, there used to be an air conditioning unit right here. She pushed it in, and when they got inside, that's when they found three people, including her mother and her sister.
Here on Keene Street, Henderson police found 76-year-old Josephine Taylor, 38-year-old Laura Taylor, and 28-year-old Bekeric Leonard. All three of them are remembered as outgoing, fun people. Leonard's mom says he loved music.
It was never a dull moment when you seen them.
Cynthia Edwards is a family friend of the Taylors. She sent us photos that show snapshots of the hours police were on the scene.
Very disturbing.
Leonard was previously reported missing. Officers say his family had last seen him on October 8th, 2 days before he was found here. While the crime scene tape is gone, questions still linger.
What is the police department going to do about this? How can three people be in one house deceased?
And what led up to their deaths? That's what police say they're investigating. They say they didn't see any signs of a physical assault or sudden injuries.
It was very shocking, not only to the daughter that found them, also the community.
There's a sense of frustration. But family members say they're focused on getting answers for their loved ones. Destiny Patterson, WRAL News, Vance County.
We can say that the bodies were taken to a medical facility to determine the cause of their deaths. Anyone with information should call the Henderson Police Department.
Right now, Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson is the acting governor of North Carolina. That's because Roy Cooper is out of the country. And Robinson just announced a mystery event tomorrow, though we don't really know what it's about. Governor Roy Cooper is in Japan until Sunday for an economic development conference. Under the state constitution, Robinson becomes acting governor while Cooper is out of state. However, Cooper's staff says he will, quote, continue to do state business while traveling. It's unclear what Lieutenant Governor Robinson will do at this event set for tomorrow. Robinson is running to replace Cooper.
A new season officially underway for the Carolina Hurricanes. The puck dropped just a couple of minutes ago for the team's home opener against the Ottawa Senators. And this time around, the Hurricanes are actually favored to bring home the Stanley Cup. Let's not jinx it, okay? WRAL's Aaron Thomas live outside of PNC Arena. You've been out there all day watching fans show up and get fired up for what is expected to be a great season, Aaron.
Yeah, you know, a great season, but also a lot of high expectations for this team and many of the fans that you see trickling into the PNC Arena right now. A lot of them trying to get to their seats, maybe get some concessions at this point. Now, we've heard from several analysts that are predicting a Stanley Cup win. This team and these players and the fans want to see them go from Stanley Cup contender to Stanley Cup winner. Now, today we had a chance to speak with many of these fans who were out here tailgating as early as this afternoon around PNC Arena. One of those fans includes Curtis Bronson. He's from Durham. He says that he left work early to make this home season opener tonight. Now he's bummed that his favorite player, forward Andre won't be on the ice tonight due to a knee injury, but says that the decision makes sense in the long run.
He needs to stay out until he gets better. Once he gets better, come on back. He's going to be like a shot right out of cannon. 40 goals or more, guaranteed. Svetch is going to do it.
Okay, I'm no longer tongue-tied. It's Svechnikov. Svechnikov. Have to pronounce that 10 times over. So this game just got started within the last few minutes. On our late news, we're going to be following the outcome and finding the unique ways that people are cheering on the home team.
Dan? I knew you'd get there. Aaron Thomas.
It takes time. It takes some time. I need some caffeine in me. I need my second win.
All right, Aaron Thomas. Live at PNC Arena. Thanks, Aaron.
Oh, boy. A 9-year-old transgender boy from Durham is suing the state of North Carolina. This is over a law he says denies him gender-affirming care. The lawsuit argues House Bill 808, which became law this year, bans these treatments for transgender people until they are at least 18 years old. So the 9-year-old transgender boy would have to wait another 9 years. He's referred to as the pseudonym Victor Vo for safety and privacy reasons. Vo isn't alone in this lawsuit. His parents, a local doctor, and several LGBTQ groups are behind him.
The same legislators who cry parents' rights on certain issues are saying that on other issues, there are some parents who can't be trusted to make decisions about what is right for their own children and families.
That was activist Brian Bond. The defendants in this case include organizations enforcing HB 808, the Department of Health and Human Services, and the NC Medical Board. DHHS has not commented on the lawsuit yet, and the medical board declined to comment.
Right now on the continuing coverage of the conflict with Israel and Hamas, the State Department out with a travel warning right here to reconsider travel. That's number 3. The next one would be do not travel if you have plans to that area of the world. On your screen, these are some of the key headlines, the bullet points coming out right now as we go on the air at 7 o'clock. At least 1,200 Israelis killed, including 189 soldiers, and also 450 targets in Gaza there, and at least 22 Americans have been killed. We'll continue to cover this story for you as new details continue to come in to the Live Center and much more in Fox 50 coming up at 10 o'clock. Back to you.
Let's talk a bit more about this. Now, I want to tell you, we have a news meeting every morning to talk about this in-depth segment. This morning, they asked me to go in-depth on the history of the conflict between Israel and Hamas, and I immediately started panicking because this topic is about as in-depth as you can get. People have very passionate positions, and right now passions are high because people are dying. The terror and the violence continues as we speak, as Mark was just summarizing. That said, a lot of journalists have tried to break this down over the past couple of days. This is a great article from the New York Times with a timeline of the clashes between Palestinian militants and Israel. And this article, like almost every other article I found, starts in the late 1940s when Israel became a nation. That's usually where these articles start, when Israel started. Here's a brief history I'm sure you've heard by now, but after World War II, a lot of Jewish people were displaced and felt unsafe, so the United Nations took a portion of Palestine and made it Israel. They were envisioning a two-state solution. When Israel proclaimed its independence, every surrounding Arab nation declared war, and there's been conflict ever since. But in this story of power and politics and history, we're only witnessing really the latest chapter for a region that has been at the center of conflict for millennia. It is in the birthplace of modern civilization, conquered and ruled by different empires for thousands of years. The Egyptian Empire, the Babylonians, the Persians, Macedonians, the Romans, the Byzantine, the Ottoman, and then the British Empire, and now home to Israel. Israel is on holy land, the location of some of the most pivotal moments in Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. I asked Duke Professor Bruce Gentleson to explain the significance of religion in the conflict surrounding the region.
If you look around the world, your religion is the basis for lots of conflicts. You know, in India right now, between Hindus and Muslims, in many other parts of the world. I mean, in Northern Ireland, it's been Catholics against Protestants, right? It is a conflict in our own country. But you're right, Dan, that you know, what you have here is the layering of so many elements. You have, you know, different religions, Islam and Judaism. You have a sense that both feel that they have long-term, call it biblical or historical, rights to the land, because the land has been moved back and forth between so many different occupiers over the centuries. And you also have countries with their own politics.
So let's take a live look. This is Jerusalem tonight, one of the most significant holy sites on the entire planet, specifically the Western Wall that you're looking at there. Here's what it looks like during the day. One of our producers took some photographs when she was in Jerusalem. You can see right there a beautiful sight. In Judaism, Jerusalem is their holiest site, where biblical holy temples stood thousands of years ago. Also a site that is revered by Muslims. It's where the Prophet Muhammad ascended to heaven and talked to God before he returned to earth. And for Christians, it's the birthplace of their faith, where Jesus was crucified, buried, and rose from the dead. Sites that are also worshipped by Muslims who believe Jesus was a prophet. There are members of each religion who believe that this holy land is their holy land and a place for their God to be worshipped, remembered, and respected. It is a layer of this conflict that is the oldest and the one I've seen written about the least recently. One of the many pieces, though, of this complicated fight that continues to escalate. Let me know what you think. What is on your mind on this story or any other? We talk about delicate topics here. I want to hear what you think about them. Tell me, email me, dan@wrl.com, and we will go in depth.
Taxpayers are spending $500 million to turn ideas into businesses at state universities. Hear from the organization leading the charge next in a live interview. The new state budget's biggest single project is NC Innovation. It's a nonprofit organization hoping to boost North Carolina's economy by ramping up innovation. We're talking about $500 million going to the group. That breaks down to about $250 million each year for the next two. That money will help fund university research projects to help them get off the ground as viable businesses. The nonprofit's chief information officer, Michelle Bolas, joins us now live to talk about all of this. Thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you so much for having me, Ashley.
So the money is going to get distributed as grants to researchers who are trying to turn whatever it is that they're working on into a business. What's your focus for these research projects? I imagine that you've got to have the private sector in mind as you are making decisions on who's going to get the money.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yes. So the $500 million that the state is investing in NC Innovation over the next 2 years, as you said, will go into an endowment, actually, that will be managed by NC Innovation, and the proceeds of that endowment, the interest of that endowment, will be invested in building out the research to commercial pipeline in North Carolina. We're not focused on any specific technology sector. We are so blessed to have a university system that is extremely diverse in our areas of expertise. Everything from aerospace and aviation and drone technology to our deep ocean technologies along our coastal institutes, to clean energy, to semiconductor industry. So really looking at where are the best opportunities to make those matches to promising industry sectors in the state and then amplify that innovation out of our research institutions.
You're doing all the behind-the-scenes work right now. You're hoping for this upcoming spring to be able to sort of launch this out to the public?
We are. We're putting the infrastructure in place. We've hired 4 regional directors. They started today at their home institutions in the East, the West, Charlotte, and the Piedmont. But we do have a number of very specific governance and regulatory steps that we need to take based on the legislative language. Mm-hmm. So making sure that we're setting ourselves up to run a successful grants program at the scale and the complexity of what we have modeled is really going to be in our focus for the next 6 months.
So you've got $500 million. That sounds like a big chunk of change. However, that's just for 2 years, and
right,
that money can go very quickly. This past summer, your CEO, Bennett Waters, said in order for NC Innovation to be viable, you'd need $1.4 billion. Otherwise, the endeavor could go bankrupt. So how do you fill that gap of money?
Correct. So the $1.4 billion models a near $90 million to $100 million spend annually, which is what our research, background research, has shown it will take in North Carolina to really do this at scale. That longevity is important, and many thanks to the members of the General Assembly who proposed and shaped a model that has the potential for that longevity, if we can show success in the early years, to be able to consider increasing that endowment so we can have a 10 to 15 year runway in the state.
Got it. So you're really leaning on follow-on funding from the state in order to make this a viable project.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let me just, real quick, we're running out of time here, but just real quick, in 10, 15 years, what do you hope the legacy will be?
I hope the legacy will be a very robust innovation to industry ecosystem, particularly in the regional parts of the state. RTP, we've seen huge success. Our regions have been a little bit left behind in some of the areas around technology-based innovation. And so we'd really like to see a distribution that takes advantage of our university system and the particular strengths of those regional areas.
Michelle Bullis, thank you so much for joining us here tonight.
Thank you for having me.
All right, meteorologist Kat Campbell joining us now. We do have a little bit of rain moving through. People were curious about the timing, especially with the fair coming up.
Oh, yeah, with the fair, we've got the Carolina Hurricanes tonight.
Right.
So much going on. The rain gets here late tonight. It's still along the South Carolina border, but once we get to the overnight hours, that's when the rain is really going to fill in. By midnight, we're up to about a 40% chance for rain, and then the early morning hours, that's when we have the best chance for rain. By 8 a.m., still some showers around, mainly from the Triangle South. By late morning, though, by 10 a.m., I think we'll be done with the rain in the Triangle, and everywhere else should be around noon in the southern part of our viewing area. Meteorologist Mike Mays will let you know if that changes once he looks at the new model data later tonight. It's just morning rain tomorrow, though, and then the rest of the day we'll see improvements. The clouds clear out. We're dry with growing sunshine. We expect to go from partly to mostly cloudy when the state fair gates open tomorrow to full sunshine by the afternoon. Good news there, 77. The high. Friday looks like a gorgeous day to be outside if you're headed to the state fair. 80 degrees, mostly sunny. Doesn't get much better than that unless you like the cool fall weather for the fair, and that's coming almost all of next week. But we've got another system that we are watching, and this could impact your Saturday plans, so keep this in mind. Scattered showers are possible Saturday, 76 at the high. It's not going to be an all-day rain or a washout, but there will be some on and off rain around the area out ahead of Saturday's front. So be prepared. You may need to dodge some of the showers by heading into one of the indoor exhibit halls at the fair Saturday. You can see all kinds of things. They have arts and crafts, winners, the photography, the giant pumpkins. There's so much to do inside and outside. I would not let any rain deter you from the rain from the fair, I should say, on Saturday. And then Sunday, we start to see the cool down, upper 60s. Tomorrow by noon, 72, partly cloudy by 4 o'clock, mostly sunny, 77, and dinner type temperatures right around 73 degrees. At the bus stop, if your kids live in the Triangle, point south, have the umbrella, but they can switch to sunglasses during the afternoon, with improving weather expected throughout the day tomorrow. Friday looks like a great day. We've got Friday night football, of course, looking dry for that. By Saturday, that's when we've got changes along a cold front. And then here comes the cool down behind that front. Highs in the mid-60s next week. Low temperatures dipping back into the 40s. So the chill is returning.
And the chill's hanging out, looks like, for a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah. Ah, all right. That's all right.
Thanks, Kat.
Tis the season.
Still ahead, many of you go to the fair for the food.
Oh, we all do, right? A lot of it's fried, some of the options we've never heard of before. How crews are making sure that food is safe to serve ahead of opening day tomorrow.
Okay, check it out. I got, the lights are turned on, you know, just fire up the merry-go-round
the
there.
Carousel, and we'll
get, yeah, the carousel, get things going. Is it merry-go-round? Is that?
You can call it both.
Okay,
yeah,
sure. Anyhow, we are hours away at this point for the North Carolina State Fair.
Today, crews inspected 150 food vendors. Yes, there are that many options for you. The inspectors check water temperatures, food storage, cabinets. So far, no vendors have failed inspections. Inspectors will be checking vendors daily, though.
We want our public to be safe and healthy. We don't want anyone sick from anything they've eaten at the fair.
If a vendor fails inspection, the vendor must fix the problem before they can serve the food. The inspectors will be back out at the state fair tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. And don't forget to stop by the WRAL booth when you visit the fair.
Look for us. We got a tent on the northeast side of Dorton Arena, facing Restaurant Row. Tomorrow, Mike Mays and Keely Arthur, they're going to be out there from 2 o'clock until 3 in the afternoon. Then on Friday, you can meet Jeff and Renee. They're going to be out there from 10:30 until 11:30 in the morning. Lena and I will be out there on Friday. Lena's great to meet. I'm okay. From 2 until 3 o'clock. Please come out and see us. I really enjoy meeting everybody. You can get a full list of when everyone's going to be there on WRAL.com. You just search fair. When are you going out?
I'm going to be there next Friday.
Nice.
This is my first time at the fair.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward mostly to the food and to meeting all of you. But I hear that our station has some life-size images of us somewhere.
Yes, that's correct.
I'm very nervous about this.
It's terrible. Last year, the only one they had of me was one of like the Stern pictures.
Angry
so
man.
Everyone else was so happy, and then I looked miserable. And you know, I hope nobody judged me.
Oh boy! Thanks for making WRAL your choice for local news.
Our next newscast is 10 o'clock on Fox 50, 11 on WRAL, and we'll see you all at the fair.
Keep watching WRAL News over the air channel 34 and Spectrum channel 1257.